Thanks for the organizers to invite me to give a talk here. And I have a special privilege to give the first talk of this. So please forgive me if I make lots of mistakes. So this is actually 7 o'clock in California right now. So, okay. What I'd like to talk about today is actually consists of two parts. The first part is the joint work with Fukaya, Ota, and Ono. This work is already several years old. And the second part of the talk is some joint work with my previous students, Cho. So please forgive me if you listen to, you already listened to this talk several months ago, but I'm going to repeat this here. Okay, so let me start with some so general quick discussion about this Novikov-Perrin. Oops. Oh, okay. Okay, so this is the ground ring which I'm going to use in the construction of the so-called infinite algebra associated to Lagrangian sub-manifold. So R is some ring which could be complex numbers or real numbers or some polynomial ring of some formal variable Q. And there is another parameter, capital T, which will encode the roughly area of certain disk which will appear in the top. And then we are going to form some kind of formal power series, which is so called a universal Novikov ring. And this is roughly just a Lorentz series, which can go to infinity, to the only one direction, the positive direction. But it does not allow this series go to the negative infinity. And then there is subring, which consists of the formal power series, so that this exponent is negative. And then this lambda zero null has a unique maximal idea, which consists of this lambda, positive lambdas. And if we just look at this quotient ring, we will get the original ground ring back. And this Novikov ring has natural filtrations, which is filtered by this exponent lambda. And then we are going to study some modular space of a holomorphic disk whose boundary lying on given Lagrangian sub-manifold. So suppose L is, M is simplex manifold, and L is some compact Lagrangian sub-manifold. For the construction, we needed to assume L is so spin and oriented. And then you choose some almost complex structure comparable to the simplex form. And then you look at this J-holomorphic disk with marked points on the boundaries. There's a K plus one marked point. And you divide this by this reparameterization of this disk. And by simple calculation, you can see the dimension of this modular space as it's given by this formula. And N is the dimension of Lagrangian sub-manifold. And mu beta is so-called the Maslow index of this relative homotopy class beta. Beta is the relative homotopy class associated with this disk with the boundary line on this Lagrangian sub-manifold. And K is the K plus one is the number of marked points on the boundary. then you are going to intersect this modular space or this holomorphic disk with the k given cycles p1 through pk. Okay, and then we are going to reserve the first or last mark point c0 for the evaluation later. Okay. Now here is the construction. So you, when you are given k chains, singular chains, so p1 is some abstract, let's say, manifold, and fi is just a map from pi to its Lagrangian multiplier. This is a cycle. And then you're going to give the grading of these chains, not by its dimension, but its cohomological dimension. So the degree of pi is going to be the codimension of the cycles. Then, as I said, you're going to consider the intersection of this holomorphic disk with the given k chains, so which means you're going to consider this fiber product. As I said, the EV0 is the evaluation of the remaining marked point, which is still free. So that defines a map from this fiber product into that. So consider this as a again, another chain. So in this way, you associate k given chain to each k given chain, another chain on that. And again, by dimension calculation, you get this dimension formula. And if you look at this codimension, the degree of that, that degree can be rewritten in this form. Now we formalize this assignment in this symbol. So here is m k beta. K is the number of the argument in this parenthesis, and beta is that given relative homotopic class, and EV0 is the evaluation map. So we associate k given chains to these particular chains. Then you sum all these chains over this formal variable q. The beta, the q is the formal parameter which encodes this Maslow index information. So you get this mk. Now you consider this as, you extend this as a k-linear map over the ground ring. This q beta is actually involves formal parameters. Q is the formal parameter encoding the Maslow index. Since we are going to consider the oriented Lagrangian submanifold, this Maslow index is always going to be even. So we divide this by 2. So q itself has degree 2. And t is the omega beta is the symplectic area of this. And then here is the formula, degree of this immediate chain minus 1 can be written as the sum of this formula. So from this, it is very natural to consider this shifted complex. So you shift, instead of considering this T, that's the originally graded complex, you're going to shift this by 1, so this C1 is shifted complex, and so this, and then we redefine the kind of shifted degree by degree original degree minus 1, and then this dimension formula tells you that this assignment has degree 1, MK has degree 1. So we consider so-called the bar complex of original complex. Here, BK C1 is the K tensor product of this shifted complex. You sum them over all K. And this is so-called the bar complex of the original, this complex C. And then we are going to expand this MK, so-called as a co-derivation. This bar complex has a natural co-algebra structure. So we expand this MK as a co-derivation, which I denote MK tilde, so explicit what it means, but it's complicated formula, so you don't really need to pay too much attention to this formula. But that's the precise meaning of what I mean by extending MK as a co-derivation. So there is already sine formulas. One of the confusing thing in this business is to write down the precise sign in the formula. And it turns out, well, in our convention, we are always going to use the shifted degree. It seems that using the shifted degree makes this encoding of sign seems to be easier to remember. Okay, and then you sum over all this MK. Each MK hat itself is a co-derivation defined on this bar complex. Now you are going to sum over all this MK hat and write that sum as B hat. And it turns out one proposition is that B hat satisfies this co-boundary properties, so the D square is zero. And what it means in terms of this M case is this quadratic relation. So this is so-called ambient relation of this M. So let me spell out these formulas for first few case. So here is the first two formulas. The formula of this ambient relation, it says M1 composed with M0, okay, is zero. So for M0 is, you don't have anything to insert, but you consider this as some kind of, what is the name? Choice of some element in this complex. So I'm going to write that as M01. M01 is, if you go back to the definition of MK, M0 itself involves one marked point on the boundary. So this M01 is going to be roughly the change given by the boundary values of Bloom. So the first formula is this M1, M0, 1, 0. The second formula is more interesting one to look at. So if M01 is zero, and this term is gone, so what the second formula means that this M1 defines co-boundaries, if M01 is zero. So because of that, you're going to call this ambient algebra. Actually, our ambient algebra is, in a way, so weak ambient algebra in a strict sense. So the general usage of this ambient algebra is for those for which M0 is zero. So we are going to call, anyway, if M0 is zero, we call this ambient algebra the strong ambient algebra. So as I said, in the strong ambient algebra, this M1 becomes a differential. So therefore, we can define their cohomologies. So if M1 is zero, so we are going to define we are going to call the cohomology of M1 as the flow cohomology of this given Lagrangian submanifold. Actually, this is the flow cohomology of one dimension. Usually, flow cohomology involves a pair of Lagrangian submanifolds, but I gave you only one Lagrangian submanifold, so this should be considered as the two Lagrangian submanifolds which completely overlap. So, in that sense, you call this most part flow cohomology. Now, so if M1 is zero, everything looks very simple, but in practice, this M0 is not going to be zero in many cases. probability cases. So you have to deal with this angle. So the first try is to look at this second infinite formula very carefully. And what you can see here is there is some kind of very, these two terms is quite symmetric. So it is quite possible that even if M0 is not zero, this first two terms may cancel away. So in that case, you can still define this flow cohomologies. So even an M0 is one is not zero, you may still have this boundary properties provided these terms cancel away. So it turns out this happens if this M01, this M01 is basically the chains, okay, the first, M01 is the basically the chains given by the boundary values of all holomorphisms. And this chains could have all dimensions, they have arbitrary dimensions in M. But in some cases, this M01 chain has all its top dimensions. In other words, M01 in some cases is a multiple of fundamental cycles. So in that case, okay, this turns out to vanish in good cases. So I will call, so this vanishing happens if M01 is a multiple of these fundamental cycles. And this fundamental cycle plays a very important role in this infinite algebra because this fundamental cycle plays the role of unit. But unfortunately, this fundamental cycle is not precisely unit. Unless you are very small, some you are in a special circumstances. So anyhow, so if this fundamental cycle turns out to be unit, which the unit, the definition of unit of this infinite algebra is given here. Okay. Anyhow, so this, if you forget this one, and what it says, this is what this formula says. Yes. I mean unit, so E is the, so that's rather. So in practice, this identity does not hold, but it holds up to a higher order terms. In that case, we call this E homotopy unit. But anyhow, so in this talk, I'm going to consider some cases in which this fundamental cycle is precisely the unit. So you are going to have this formula. So according to this definition here of unit, you can see that these two, if you move this one to right hand side, you get exactly this one. So if fundamental cycle is a unit and this M01 is the multiple of fundamental cycles, and this M1 is always defines of boundary. And it turns out this is the case for Fanatori. If you look at the Lagrangian toroid fiber or Fanatori case, and these two factors, the first one is that this M01 is going to be multiple of fundamental cycles, and this fundamental cycle is the precise unit. So now let's go back to the general discussions. So if M1, as I said, if M1 satisfies boundary, then we can define flow cohomologies. Then what if this M1 is not zero? Then you one thing you can try is to apply some kind of gauge transformations to kill this M0 term vanishes, or try to make the deformed M1 satisfy boundary properties. So one way of deforming this M1 is using some we call gauge transformations. So you look at some D degree one element, in the shifted degree, it has going to be degree zero. Now you look at this kind of exponential. The exponential is usually you have this 1 over k factorial in front of this, k power, but since you are going to, we do not allow commute this boundary mark points on the aperture. We only look at some particular ordering of this boundary mark points. You don't have this 1 over k factorial, so it's just exponentials. And then you redefine all this mk map in this complicated way. Anyhow, so by doing this, sometimes you can deform this M1 so that this M1, deform the M1, satisfy this boundary. So that happens if this degree one element satisfies this equation, which is kind of this Moore-Cauda equation. In this precise equation of this means you're going to look at this equation here. And sometimes, okay, you remember B itself involves formal power. B is a formal power series that has the T and Q in it. So one way of solving this equation is order by order. You start solving this equation for the lowest order of capital T. But it means you try to solve this equation for the homotopy class beta with the smallest area. And then you solve this, and then you repeat it. And the solvability is not always possible. So there is some obstructions, and that's what we call these obstructions to solving this amount of problem equations. Okay, so now let's go to the second part of the talk. So it turns out for the final Turing manifold case, so now let's, this M01 is multiple of a unit. So what's so special about this Lagrangian torus fiber of this Turing manifold? First, it has these torus actions. So each torus is a homogeneous space of Pn. It's like in the Gromov-Witten theory, it's kind of homogeneous. And so once you have holomorphic, one holomorphic disk, and you can just multiply this disk by torus. So the boundary image of this holomorphic disk, if you collect all of them, it obviously covers the whole Lagrangian fiber. That basically tells you that this M01 is going to be the multiple of fundamental class. And why this fundamental class is a unit? And the reason is because there, I define this Maslow index, and this Maslow index turns out to be always positive in this final Turing case. So the minimal Maslow index is 2, and the M01 is just the M1, M0 beta 1 is M1 beta and B0. And if you recall the dimension of M1 beta, it's going to be u beta minus 2. So if, so as I said, the mass of index is always positive in this case. So if mu beta is greater than 2, this dimension is too big. So this edges current or the cycle as a current is automatically 0. Except when mu beta is 2. So if mu beta is 2, you get exactly the cycle of dimension n. And because of this homogeneity, this m n beta for mu beta is 2 is going to be multiple of fundamental. So now let's, we are interested in computing this flow cohomologies. So we know this flow cohomology is well defined for this Lagrangian torus fibers. So we are trying to compute this flow cohomology. And computing this flow cohomology means we have to exploit or use all the holomorphic disks that are present in the, for this Lagrangian scenario. We have to know the information of all the holomorphic disks with the boundary line on the given Lagrangian fiber. So let's look at some examples. So you look at the P2, and this is the simplest phanatory. And the moment you look at these standard actions, and it's well known the moment map image of this P2 under the natural torus action is equilateral triangles. And at each interior point of this triangle, there is a Lagrangian fiber associated to it. And because of this G3 symmetries, you can easily see the flow cohomology must vanish except at the barrel center. Here is one Lagrangian sum manifold. You rotate by 60 degrees, you are here. So what it means, and it turns out this rotation of this base can be realized by some Hamiltonian isotopy on the top in the ambient manifold. And the flow cohomology is invariant under the Hamiltonian diffeomorphisms. So if you know this fact, this flow cohomology must vanish because the flow cohomology is essentially coming from the intersection of this pair of Lagrangian manifolds. But as you see here, these two fibers do not have any intersection. But this argument does not work exactly at the barycenter point. Here this barycenter is the fixed point of this rotation. So it's not clear whether this, the flow cohomology of this Lagrangian fiber and the barycenter vanishes or not. It turns out this flow cohomology does not vanish, and the flow cohomology turns out isomorphic to the classical flow cohomology of torus. And this is what Zhou proved in his thesis. So he proved this fact for arbitrary dimension n. And this kind of thing was predicted by some physical argument. So now I want to generalize this example to arbitrary phanatoric manifolds. So let's briefly describe what this the phanatoric manifolds are. Okay, so let me first describe the complex structure of this toric manifold. The phanatoric manifold is made of some is made of some fans, so-called fans, and even the fan of regular cones in this vector space, and even the vector space have some given lattice in it. And you're going to denote G sigma as the set of one-dimensional generator. This fan is consists of many cones, and you're going to denote G sigma as the set of one-dimensional cones. G sigma is the generator of the one-dimensional cones. And there is the notion of primitive collections. So this is the collections which is minimally dependent. If we move one of the elements, they are linearly independent. So in the P2 case, there is only one primitive collection, which is just called Z1, Z2, Z3. This is the picture. And then you're going to look at this kind of the varieties or subspace in capital CN, which is the solution set of this coordinate for these primitive collections. And then you get rid of all these collections out of CN, which you're going to denote by Z sigma. Consider, you know that complement of G sigma is U sigma. And in the cyclic case, this is the information. Okay, so now this U sigma, there is a natural complex torus acting on it. This is given by this equation. Therefore, you can now divide this U sigma by this complex torus. That's precisely what the Turing manifold is. According to these constructions, this quotient has a natural complex structure. Everything is complex. Construction is complex, so it has very natural canonical complex structures here. And then this residual torus here, d sigma. D sigma is associated with this lattice, sub-lattice k. So you look at this quotient. So that's what I mean by this residual torus. This complex torus naturally acts on this manifold x sigma. And if you restrict this to the, look at the real part of this torus, that acts transitively on each fiber of this torus, Lagrangian torus, this real torus. Now this Turing manifold also has natural symplectic structure in it. And now I'm going to describe this, how the symplectic structure arises. And this symplectic structure arises in the following way. And the physicists usually write this action of this complex torus d sigma using so-called charge matrix. So this charge matrix is nothing but the choice of this basis of this k. K is this sub-lattice inside the d to the capital N. So you just choose one basis of this k, and you're going to denote this basis as capital Q. And then you consider its dual basis as lying in this K dual. So you consider the corresponding this real torus K. So this real torus naturally acts on this complex N capital N dimensional space by this explicit formula. Now the, so this torus K, real torus K, acts on this CN, So you, CN has a natural canonical symplectic structure, Euclidean space. So you're going to do this symplectic reduction using this K torus. So that moment map has this explicit formula. Now, this Turing manifold can be also constructed using this symplectic reduction. The symplectic reduction usually is done by choosing regular values of the moment map. And you look at the premise, then divide this premise by this given torus K. So you're going to choose a vector in the image of this moment map. For some reason, I'm going to write down this equation, which is going to relate with some other parameters that appears later. So that's the Turing manifold. In this second construction, it provides very naturally the symplectic form omega. The previous complex construction gives the natural canonical complex structure. In this part of symplectic construction provides natural symplectic structure. It turns out they together define natural Kähler manifold. Now that residual torus, the complex torus, acts on this Turing manifold. Now the real part of this acts on this Turing manifold. So this itself, and if it preserves the symplectic form, so therefore you can take another the Lagrangian fibers of this Turing manifold is just the preimage of this moment map of the residual torus. That's right. This Lagrangian fibers in the Turing manifolds arise. It turns out this symplectic form has a very explicit formula in terms of some piecewise linear function on the this moment of polytope. This formula is given by this Guillemin here. Guillemin wrote down this symplectic form explicitly using this several set of by the linear functions on the images. The mu t is the moment map, and lambda, this low Lix is the image. This Li will reappear later in the calculation of area of some holomorphic space. About this picture. Okay, now let's go to the study of holomorphic space. Okay? So now I'm going to fix one Lagrangian fiber of this moment map images here. This is the moment map images of regular torus, real torus. I'm interested in the holomorphic disk whose boundary lying on this particular fiber. Omega r. Oh, omega is the symplectic form associated to the value of the moment map mu k, which is of occurred in the construction of the Turing manifold. R is the vector in this R is there, here. So I wrote down this moment map, mu k, as a map from Cn to k-dimensional real space, which is should be considered the dual of this K term. So if you realize this dual of K torus, the real dual of K torus in CN, this is going to be some K, this K dimensional plane. The K dimensional plane, you just choose one point there. You look at the, go back to the symplectic reduction construction. So R is the, can be considered the vector in the dual of K torus, the real dual of K torus, or if you like, you can consider this as a vector in CN. Lying on some K dimensional vector space. So it just occurs in the construction of this Turing manifold as a symplectic reduction. So you should consider that as one of the points in the dual of the algebra of K terms. Okay, it turns out you can classify all the holomorphic disks with a boundary lying on this Lagrangian torus from this description of this Turing manifold. The description of Turing manifold starts from this CN. So that's why this is sometimes called a linear sigma model constructions. So the classification of the torus, the holomorphic disk itself reflects that constructions. So you fix one Lagrangian torus L A. A is one of the interior points in this polytope in the n dimensional torus. Now you look at, so suppose you're given this holomorphic disk. Now it turns out this holomorphic disk can be lifted to some disk in CN, whose boundary lying on this standard Lagrangian tori. In CN, you look at product tori, which I denote L theta. And each Lagrangian, each holomorphic disk whose boundary lying on this given Lagrangian fiber can be lifted to some holomorphic disk in CN, and once with this product torus. So therefore, this holomorphic disk, you can actually, each coordinate is going to be the holomorphic functions with the boundary lying on this surface. And all those, of course, holomorphic functions can be the product of, so the Blaske product of these Möbius transformations. So it turns out all the holomorphic, any holomorphic disk W is lifted to a certain holomorphic disk, so that each coordinate function has obvious Blaske product. The point is this, the number of factors completely determines the Maslow index of the disk. The Maslow index is basically the sum of these factors of the so in particular, if the this holomorphic disk has Maslow index 2, there is only one factor which involves any non-constant function, and that is must be the structure linear transformation. All the other coordinates must be constant. Okay, so this is just two substitute liftings are related by this action of constant torus. This lifting is not unique, but once you fix this lifted Lagrangian torus fixed, then two such liftings are just the multiplication of constant. And in these studies, it is very important to know the regularity or Fredholm property of this holomorphic disk. It turns out all of these disks have all the nice properties you can imagine. All of these holomorphic smooth disks are transverse, and the evaluation maps are automatically transverse. And you don't have to worry about whether they are really the modular space is smooth or not. And they are all smooth, even if you include a singular strata, as long as they do not have sphere bubbles. But since in the final case, even if the presence, even the presence of the Ptolemaic spheres does not cause too much trouble. So, but in the non-final case, this may cause trouble. So that's why we are listing ourselves to the confirmatory case. So, because of all these properties, this evaluation cycle EV0 that appears in the construction of NK map really defines the cycles without perturbing the evaluation map. So this is the reason why this fundamental cycle called M01 is a multiplier. This fundamental cycle is a unit, rather, it's called homotopy. Okay. So now let me write what this M01 explicitly here. So as I said, M01 now is basically consists of all this modular space of Maslow index 2. And Maslow index 2 involves only one factor in this lifting, all the other constants. That makes this M01 has this formula. The Q is the parameter encoding the degrees. So that's why the Maslow index 2 only contributes. So that's why this it does not have any power of Q here. It's Q degree 2. And you have to encode all the area of this whole holomorphic disk. The number of holomorphic disks is precisely the dimension of this the CN, which originally started from. So what it left out is to computing this area of this holomorphic disk. So what roughly, if you're given, let's say, polytope, you look at one interior point in the polytope. Basically, the holomorphic disk intersect is one of the divisors exactly once. It is boundary lying on this divisor. So you need to compute this area of that particular disk. It turns out this particular disk the area can be computed by looking at the image of this holomorphic disk. By the classification theorems, this holomorphic disk in the lifting has only one factor that has non-constant. It turns out that also has some circle action, actually it's preserved by circles. So the image turns out to be just a line in this polytope. And it turns out this area is given by this one. So area of that minimal holomorphic disk has this nice formula here. Li is the piecewise linear function that appears in the formula of holomorphic form, simplex form. So in that sense, this simplex structure are completely determined by how the area of this holomorphic disk behaves. So now let's quickly discuss the relation of this with the physicists, the B models, so forth. So the meter of this final quotic is some non-compact complex torus, which is obtained by basically applying the T dual to each fiber. So if you apply this T dual, dual torus construction to the interior fiber, they all define this n-dimensional torus. But if you approach to the boundary of this polytope, and some of this torus is going to be very large, this radius in some directions. So that makes this the meter is non-compact complex torus. And that non-complex torus can be described by some periodic variables, capital Y. This is just the exponent. You write this standard coordinate in Cn as exponential of. And this mirror has very important ingredient that's called Landau-Ginzburg potentials. And this Landau-Ginzburg potential is nothing but the sum of the standard coordinates written in this form. And by some change of variables, this Landau-Ginzburg potential is given by this explicit formula. And the mirror map in this mirror correspondence is given by this way. The real part of yi is the, essentially the area of the minimal holomorphic disk. The imaginary part is some other holonomic variable which I just mentioned. So this flow formula construction can be twisted by joining some flat line bundles on the torus. So this, each holomorphic disk will involve this holonomic information along the boundaries. So this mu is that holonomic information. So imaginary part of this capital YI corresponds to that this holonomic information. So So the final theorem is this. So now the theorem is, so this M01, I gave you the explicit formula like this. And then this W super potential is here. Here is superpotential, and here is M01. The claim is, now under this mirror correspondence, and this M01 exactly corresponds to this Landau-Ginzburg potential. So that's good. The mirror substitutions of, of course, physicists always consider some complex parameters. But in the construction flow homology, as I described, involves this formal parameter T. In this case, so, but in this case, in this Cauchy case, M01 is really polynomial. It's not a formal power series. So inserting some parameter really makes sense. So we're going to insert these particular insertions. And then these two exactly correspond. And the derivative of dW corresponds to applying the M2, the flow formula, this delta is basically flow formula boundary operator constructed. You apply this flow for boundary operator to point class, and this differential is corresponds to this. In fact, the Fourier predicted that the flow homology will not vanish at the critical point of superpotential. It turns out the vanishing, the vanishing of this delta 2 point is really is the, can be it translated to the non-vanishing of flow formula. So that prediction is precisely also corresponds to this corresponding to non-vanishing flow formula. But that's needs some work. But that's the case. And one final remark is that you can keep differentiating this superpotential and ask what corresponds to this derivative of superpotential. And in a recent work by Cho, he actually relate this derivative is the product structure of this flow homology. We used this infinite algebra for this flow homology construction. But if you want to consider the superponderation potential and its derivative, you have to symmetrize this L-infinite algebra to obtain the so-called L-infinite algebra. And then this derivative of superpotentials exactly corresponds to this higher K-linear map that symmetric relations. In particular, if you look at the Hessian of the superpotentials, and this Hessian of superpotential provides, I mean, describes this product structure flow for monoids, which is, does not vanish yet. The critical point corresponds to the Lagrangian fiber whose flow formula does not vanish. So, of course, the Hessian makes sense at the critical point. So, this Hessian provides this product structures through the mirror. Questions? No. Some of them, no. They are. So in the CPN cases, they are monotone. But in other funnels, in other funnels, they are monotone. Well, so this Lagrangian fiber Fano toric case is so-called weakly. So this Maurer Cardan equation is something like the MEV. We want to solve this one, like in the general. Let's say unobstructed case. But in this Fano-toric case, we do not want to solve these equations. We instead try to solve this equation, EV plus some constant times this Q parameter. So it's going to be a Q and multiple fundamental clock. And it turns out this the random Ginzburg potential corresponds to this parameter C. So this should be considered as some function P B. And this P B is exactly so. In the Calabi-Yau case, I'm not so sure. So, yeah, Tori case. The structure is a little bit different. In the Calabi-Yau case, all the things you're presumably you're asking the case Lagrangian torus was meet. Method of a class vanishes. In that case, there is some other formula, but I don't
at 11 o'clock.